You know, Henry, I always wondered why you had decided to move north. And now that you've mentioned your judgeship ambitions, I know. Your introduction reminds me of a true story about two other people. There are two economists, father and son, the father of whom is Sam Nerlove and the son of whom is Mark Nerlove. And this is a true story of Sam Nerlove, who used to be at the University of Chicago for many years and who is now in semi-retirement at an institution which appeals to semi-retirees, namely University of California in Los Angeles, went up to Berkeley to give a lecture. And after the lecture, as he was walking out of the room, Sam heard two people talking in a puzzled tone to one another. And one was saying to the other, "You know, that wasn't Nerlove." And the other was saying, "No, that was Nerlove's father." That's a true story. Of course, our discussion tonight, as you realize, is about welfare, and it's supposed to be amicable. But Frances Hazlitt came up to me before, and she said, "Well, you know, no physical violence." And I said to her, "Frances, do you think you can restrain yourself?" I am only going to take a few minutes because I think most of you are probably fairly well aware of what my general position in this area is, and therefore I would prefer to reserve my time for commenting on the comments of Henry and Ernest. But let me open up the discussion by summarizing briefly what my position is. Not long ago, the Government Accounting Office made a survey of expenditures in the United States for programs justified in the name of poverty. They listed the federal programs, the state and local programs, and the private charitable programs, and they added up the amount, total amount of money that was being spent in the United States on programs ostensibly to help the poor. They also, in the same report, gave an estimate of the total number of families in the United States who could be regarded as poor under the particular definition, which, as you realize, is entirely arbitrary and not a very useful one, the particular definition that the government adopts of poverty. Well, now, if you take one number and divide it by the other, you have a number that gets down to a meaningful figure on the amount of money that is allegedly being spent per poor family in the United States on poverty. Well, if you do that division, and this was for a couple of years ago when prices were about 10% lower than they are now, the answer came out to $9,000 per poor family. Now, that sum happens to be larger than the average income of all the families in the United States. And it is therefore obvious that if indeed $9,000 per family were not only being spent on poverty, but were going to poor families, well, then the poor families would be the middle-class families, and the middle-class families would be the poor families. And, of course, the answer to that is that most of that $9,000 is not, of course, going to the poor families. We have what you might best describe as a poverty racket, in which, in the name of helping the poor, we have all of us, and let's none of us suppose that we're guiltless, we have all of us been putting in programs that will help some special thing that we are interested in, and that, of course, we know is really, ultimately, for the good of the poor. I remember somebody questioning a friend of mine about this particular figure and saying, "How could it conceivably be?" And he said, and this happened to be true, he said, "You know, the other night I happened to be visiting in New York with the head of the poverty agency of the welfare program, and afterwards he had his chauffeur drive me home in his Cadillac." That, the cost of that Cadillac and that chauffeur, of course, comes out of that $9,000 per family. So what we have is a situation in which we have a tremendous number of programs, allegedly in the name of the poor, but which in fact are not really most of them, and we could go over them one by one, are not most of them doing much good to people who are truly poor, but are mostly either being wasted in administrative expenses or providing benefits to people who by no stretch of the imagination could be called poor. Now, the fundamental question of welfare, as I see it, is how do we get out of that mess? Those programs are not only wasting money, they are not only distributing benefits to people whom it is not in any way desirable to benefit, but they are, many of them, doing positive harm to the people whom we label as poor, to the people whom Ed Banfield today was referring to as being in the lower class culture. It is doing many of them positive harm because our system, the only one of these programs that really is going to poor people in any significant degree, indeed the only program I know in which you can have you can really demonstrate that the people who are getting the money are on the average of lower income than the people who pay the taxes. The only program of that kind I know is the Direct Relief Aid to Dependent Children Welfare Program. And that program, although it's going to poor people who have lower average incomes than the rest of the community, is probably doing them more harm than it is good. It's doing them harm. Well, you know, there's an old economic principle, and that principle is that if there's a demand for something, a supply will arise to meet the demand. And if there's a demand for poor people, a supply will rise to meet the demand. And so if you provide people with welfare benefits on condition that they stay in a condition of poverty, they will, unfortunately, be induced to stay in a condition of poverty. By having high welfare benefits in many northern communities, you have attracted people from all over the country up to those areas. And once people get on welfare, as we have administered welfare, it's very hard for them to get off. Because to get off means risking the possibility of not being able to get on. It means, as you know, essentially paying 100% tax as we have administered it before. In addition, the methods of giving welfare have encouraged the splitting of families. Husbands who intend to do well for their, who are trying to help out their family will often find that they can contribute more to their family by deserting them than they can by staying with them. In addition, it has provided an army of welfare workers who are supposed to be helping the poor, but in fact serve as policemen for them. In fact, eliminate any possibility of individual and independent activity on the part of the poor, and therefore undermine their whole desire to help themselves. Now, this is a mess, and the crucial question is, how do you get out of it? And I do not believe it is any answer to say you abolish it, because you cannot do that. You neither can do it politically, nor can you do it humanly, unless you have some alternative way of easing the transition from where you are now to where you would like to go. The purpose of the negative income tax, as I have developed it, as I have favored it, is as a device for enabling us to get off of this position and onto a position where we are spending much less in the name of helping the poor, and where at the same time we enable the poor to make the transition. Now, one of the purposes of this is that one of the ways to stop this poverty racket is to require accurate labeling. One of the virtues of a negative income tax is that it labels what you do. It says you're giving money to people who have low income. And it's very hard when you're giving money to people of low income to have most of the money go to people of high income, as some of the other programs do. Now, I am sure you, all of you, know the general character of the negative income tax, and if not, I would be glad to spell it out, but the general idea is simply that you treat everybody the same up and down, that everybody has an income tax to file. Those who have more than a certain level pay a tax. Those who have less than a certain level receive a fraction of the difference back and receive a payment. Now, of course, in practice, it would be handled by weekly payments, just as taxes are withheld weekly. It would be handled by advance filing and so on. There are lots of administrative details that I don't really think we ought to go into here. But the essential idea is that you substitute for the present method of welfare a method under which the criterion of whether somebody gets assistance is exactly the same as the criterion of whether we pay taxes, namely his income. There's a needs test, but the needs test is the income test, in which you substitute for the paternalistic distribution of welfare that we now have, the distribution of funds through the tax method by payments in cash to people who have income below a a certain level. Now, there are, rather than spelling it out, I would like to make two points about judging it. The first of these is that in judging this, you have to ask, compared with what? If we were in the ideal state of the world that I might like to be in, or in the state of the world in which we were 50 years ago, in which there was no large-scale governmental welfare program, I do not know whether I would be in favor of a negative income tax or not. But that isn't the world we're in. And the thing you have to do is to compare the negative income tax with what you now have and ask, is there some other device you have for enabling us to make the transition from where we are to a situation in which fewer people, many fewer people, are subject to being dependents of the state? The second point I want to make is that the negative income tax is a name for a collection of programs. And some of them are good, some are bad. Merely to say that something is a negative income tax doesn't mean everybody who is in favor of some kind of a negative income tax will be in favor of it. Now, let me illustrate that with the particular proposal that is before the Congress today. As you all know, President Nixon proposed some time back a substitute for certain parts of our present welfare program, the aid to dependent children and the direct relief, a substitute which is in the form of a negative income tax. He didn't call it that. He called it a family security system, which is, I must admit, a more attractive title. I may say I've always liked the negative income tax as a title just because it's unattractive. It's honest. But the family security system, as proposed, is a negative income tax, partially. But the particular form in which it got proposed in Congress, and I believe it has come out of the Ways and Means Committee, is not a good form. Part of it is very good. The general idea is good. But when you look into the details, you discover that it has been so constructed that instead of a 50% marginal rate, which is the rate in the basic family security program, it said you will pay $1,600 as a minimum, and every dollar earned for a certain amount will not affect that, and beyond that, for every dollar earned, the payment will be reduced by 50%. Now, that part of it would be fine. I'm all in favor of that. That is precisely the kind of a plan that I have proposed for many years. But then, in the course of all of the discussions, there got tied onto it the food stamp plan and a proposal for the way in which you should phase out state supplement when the state plan was higher than the federal plan. And it turns out that if you do the arithmetic, instead of having a 50% rate, the food stamp plan alone converts that to a 75% rate. If you add in other elements, in particular Social Security taxes and this state supplementation, you get a marginal rate up to over 90% for quite a number of classes, and indeed to over 100% for a particular special case. That's only in the case of a state that has a high supplementation. But the point I'm trying to make is that if you examine the details of that plan, it is not a desirable application of the principles of the negative income tax. And I may say I so testified before the Ways and Means Committee sometime during this past year. The general principle is fine, but in order to make it a desirable, preferable substitute for our present welfare program, you have to get rid of that food stamp element and change the way in which the state supplementation fits in so that you have a marginal rate that is not higher than 50%. Because the essential feature of the program is to give people an incentive to work themselves out, to give them an incentive to work themselves out by getting something out of additional earnings in part way. Now, one final comment. The major objection that people make to the negative income tax, and that Henry will spell out at length, I am sure, I am perfectly willing to put my forecasting ability to the test on this question. The major objection people make is political. Isn't this a bad principle? Isn't it a bad principle to say that people who have low incomes shall be entitled to receive a supplement from the state? Moreover, is not this principle going to lead to an indefinite expansion? You'll start out with $2,400. You'll go up to $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. You've got a monster which will grab hold of you. Well, I think the answer to that is that both of those are real problems, very real problems. But we're fully up to our neck with them right now. And the question is, and in my opinion, in both respects, the negative income tax is preferable to what we now have. We now, in fact, do have the equivalent of a government guarantee of supplementation of income up to a minimum. Indeed, in the state of Illinois, this is written into the law in so many words, and I believe it is written into the law in many other states, but whether it is or not, it is de facto true that you now have a government-guaranteed subsistence level. In the second place, by having a host of welfare programs, of poverty programs, aid to the blind and aid to the dependent children and aid to the disabled, a social security program, a farm relief program, you have the classical case in which each special interest lobbies for its vis-a-vis the others, and the one builds up, and that's how we've gotten into this incredible mess of $45 or more billion a year going for these programs labeled poverty programs, precisely because of this tendency to expand. It has been my belief that if you could be honest and open and above board, if you could label this for what it is, if you could lump it into one general program, there was at least more of a chance that it would be clear what you were doing, that the costs would be open, and therefore that we would have somewhat more defense against the unquestionably present political tendency to expand these programs. Now I'll give the floor to Henry.